If you don't like what we tell you to believe in, we'll kill you.
Zionism, Google the SS Liberty. I just want Jews to go home. And for Iran to get the bomb, first you must learn this simple truth. Epstein didn't kill himself. Ah.
Hello, thank you for tuning in to the free edition of The Daily Shoah on therightstuff.biz. If you're hearing this message, it's because you're not subscribed, and we need you to change that. See, therightstuff.biz is 100% listener-funded. We have no sponsors, we have no mega-donors, we have no shadowy helicopter donors coming in and saving our ass. We need you to support us in our efforts to do these shows. So please navigate to therightstuff.biz/paywall and follow the instructions, create an account, create an order. We sell subscriptions monthly, quarterly, twice yearly, and yearly. It's a little bit complicated because of the rampant censorship we've had to endure, so you'll have to pay with cryptocurrency, money orders by mail, e-checks, or you can navigate to my Odyssey channel, create an account on Odyssey, and you can pay me with your credit card. Thank you, and enjoy the first half of the show. Thank you.
Good morning! Time for another Daily Show Off!
Wow, I have no memory of actually using that drop. That was
fucking great.
It was better than the song.
We should actually use that more.
Oh, often. I was intending to, like, if I ever get around to making, like, the new intro, like, that's what I was going to use. But that was good. But that is, That was a little bit of cringe from Christmas Past, the Epstein Didn't Kill Himself
song. That one was pretty good. I mean, the thing that...
Very cringe.
Again...
I hate my old parodies. Nothing... I just can't listen to them anymore.
One of the problems, and it's not your fault. It's all of our faults, really. It's really my fault. Is that, like... Not really. It's all of our faults. It's that, like... All the older Christmas... So many of them have, like, a Trump theme, and it's just like,
That one didn't. That one didn't. No, I just...
That one did not. That's oh, my God. Still, that one's still relevant.
Fucking heater just exploded on me again.
Oof. The gas. You're a gas-killing animal. But yeah, that's sort of one of the issues. Is like I too have some nostalgia for some of these oldies. We've talked about this before.
I just hear like recording mistakes. I hear the time constraints. Like I hear like there's these. So all my vocals, I tend to double them because I don't have a very good voice. So if I just leave my voice alone, like solo, it sounds kind of bad. So, but you put two, it works. But if you leave like a timing error or a pitch error between the two and you don't fix it with editing, it sounds... So there's these weird lines where I hear this like smear of either the timing being off or the pitch being off between the two, and it's like, oh, why didn't I fix that? It's
oh,
like,
dude.
It's like, well, I didn't fix it because like we probably had to do the show, you know, 20 minutes before I was done and just never got to it.
You've told me about that trick of doubling, and when we did
Dublin.
That dumb
I'm
rap
from
song
Dublin.
Years ago...
Sorry.
Was that?
I was just doing the "I'm from Dublin" bit from that old MTV The Real World bit that Saturday Night Live
did. Dublin.
I'm from Dublin.
But when we did that shitty rap song,
yes,
like years ago, you, me, and Mark, I doubled my lyrics.
I remember. Sounds good.
And they were. But the thing is that they were. It was off by like a millisecond, and you hear it. You can hear it.
Right.
I can hear it. Maybe others can't. But I can hear that. Like that. It's like they're not in line by like.
Yeah.
Not very much, but just you know, a tiniest bit is enough.
Yeah, and I've basically learned since then to like pay very close attention to that and make sure everything's perfect. I'm way better at that now. So when I hear back when I didn't bother or didn't think it was necessary, I'm just like,
I'm bothering.
Yeah, I'm bothering my body. So Epstein didn't kill himself.
I'm bothering.
The only complaint
about that one, the content is still relevant.
Right.
But I think here's the thing: you are overly critical in that respect about your songs because people always used to just love them because they were funny.
Yeah, it used to
be easy.
But
the problem is the Trump theme in too many of them is just like now is makes me cringe. But that's nobody's.
Yeah, I remember like my parents and their friends would listen to that. What was that really terrible Hillary one that I did? My Hillary
was it the one?
Control.
Oh God! I'm gonna be honest. I always hated that.
I don't even
hate the root song.
Oh, Basket of Deplorables. Like every like
that one was just like please kill me.
All the normie energy around that was like huge. You could like pass that around and people just loved it. And then before they knew it, they were on my weird like kind of Nazi kind of Trump YouTube. Channel clicking around being like, wait, what's going on? And like, or like you go go read the comments, you're like, whoa, what the fuck? Because just the names of people that would comment on it were going to be like scary to people that just like Donald Trump. So that was pretty funny.
Right, it's like just Trump boomers, like
Trump
that
boomers,
and that song.
You would literally have like Kike Slammer, you would have comments from Kike Slammer 88 and like people just like that saying how cool that song was, and the Trump boomers being like, hold on, wait, what? You just gotta hope that they're kind of blind from all their lead intake from the gasoline and the water and the paint that like they can't actually read it. They just hear the song. I guess we gotta bank on.
if we had thought about it back in those days, we could have done a thing like, okay, we're going to deliberately put these boomers in a place with like these Nazis, and the Nazis are gonna like bully them into being like actually racist and anti-Semitic. I don't know if you can do that though. Boomers' brains are atrophied.
Well,
like,
Alex and I were talking about this the other day. We used to do this to like Facebook groups. They weren't boomers, but just by being around, entering into a Facebook group that was like where liberals, conservatives, and libertarians and commies debated, and showing up as like fascists and just through like social proof, and basically conservatives would see. This is what it's like to not like have to hold back when you want to own the libs. Like you just own them with like. Beating their shit
social
tests on Nazis, you know, and I was just saying, we have brought there's people that are still with us to this day from those days. We're going to use Stevie Bix.
There were people I met when I was out in Dubuque. There were some guys who
Dubuque.
Like, that was actually their first event.
When you were out Dubuque breaking?
Someone tells, what's that?
When you were out Dubuque breaking?
Yeah, Dubuque Breaking.
Dubuque Breaking. Oh, God.
That's what we should have called the event, Dubuque Breaking.
I might call the show
actually,
that.
Actually, we were broken by Dubuque.
That works, too. It like works Dubuque, on several
I think
levels.
Maybe that's just what it does, Dubuque Breaking. Like, you go out there and you're like, oh, man, I'm in Dubuque. I must be broken.
Like, how did I get here?
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
But, yeah. Dude, let me tell you this. Oh, dude, I've got funny. Just before we get back to this thing, Tony and I, before the event, because the event started at like 4 and doors at 3 or whatever, though, we were hungry, obviously, because we're human beings. And so we were like, let's go to like Texas Roadhouse and get a steak
before
the thing. Although, I got to tell you, Longhorn beats the pants off Texas Roadhouse.
It depends. Longhorn's inconsistent. That's the problem.
Ooh, but
it's not. Longhorn trends to their steaks are smaller than they say they are, and they usually like grossly undercook them, and you're often like,
y'all got Longhorn Steakhouse money? I ain't got that.
Is it expensive?
I'm not saying I have it. But I'm just saying, like, whenever I've gone to Longhorn Steakhouse before.
When they do a good job, it's very good. It's just that they're very inconsistent.
Yeah, but and also, like, it is, like, a lot nicer in there than it is in Texas Roadhouse.
Texas Roadhouse is, like, a shit pile of, like, American stupidity that I almost...
Yeah, I have a very difficult time handling it. But we're in Dubuque, Iowa, in a Texas Roadhouse. And, like...
The fuck?
There was a Mexican tranny with like bright red lipstick and dangly earrings, but it was like a dude.
That makes sense.
And I was like, this is actually America. And the thing that's so depressing is like, and Tony and I were talking about this, and like I've been on the road recently. I took a break from going on the road because of my back, but now I'm back doing it again. And I'm like, I'm remembering. Oh yeah, that's right. I go out to these podunk towns in middle America, and I pull up at the gas station or at the Sheets or whatever the fuck it is, and there's just like trannies like working these service jobs like every fucking place, and it's just like, oh my god, dude, like I'm not the only one to observe it. Others have observed it, and it's just like,
It's all over. It's all over small town America now. It's fucking.
It's
wild.
Everywhere, man. It's crazy, and it's not like it's everybody, but it's like, you know, when you see it, you notice
it's
it,
for
you know, like it's like the time you here's the case where it's like not really for, well, I guess it sort of is for me in a
and
way. It's not for me to enjoy, it's for me to become like depressed about, but it is for me.
Fucking fucking
yes, this is, yes, the obvious. Setting of the obvious background God. Is always what spices things up.
I'm just
that around just Alex.
No, I'm gonna put around the splatter.
Oh, I see what
now
you're
the,
doing.
Now the splatter is festive. The splatter that shouldn't be there. They used to have the episode 800 like number in it.
Yeah, but we don't. We just lost the energy to continue to. You know, you could every morning in OBS like you could put a number there of text and just change it every show.
Oh God, agency effort with graphic design. This is supposed to be a podcast. Suddenly, I'm a video producer.
I'm saying like it wouldn't be as much effort as like changing it in Photoshop every time and
then
importing a new graphic.
Yeah, because that's what I had to do. Well, no, because that guy made like 100 images. I just had to change one digit. I just had to flip it every day. It was pretty funny.
It would be better if those like machine cut letters or whatever the hell kind of lettering he had, you know.
It was the 3D smoke in the sky. Remember?
Oh yeah,
it was the flight 800. It was the flight 800 stuff.
Oh my god, that's a level of effort that oof.
So he just made all 100 of them, and I just would flip through them every time. Plus, we noticed that too. We did a little Christmas shopping, and it's basically the same. Like my wife is like, you know, we're in these stores, and the people ringing. She's like, well, how come every guy is like a scuzbag or like a tranny or they're just all weird, like gay weirdos? I was like, well, because they're making minimum wage running the register at the bookstore. I mean, that's where you're going to find, you know, it's not like they're mentally stable enough to have a real job. I mean, nothing against retail workers, but, you know, that is a place where you can shove problematic weirdos like that. And and that's where like the hiring department is going to be like, well, either they're going to be like enthusiastic, like, oh, look at you. You don't know what kind of genitalia you have. That's great. You can work. You can be in our customer relations like area. You can be. We'll put you right out there. Yeah. We can signal. Or it's just like they don't give a fuck. It's just like you're going to show up.
Just don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's just like the worst. It's like the best case. It's like this dude's wearing like pink nail polish, and otherwise it's like relatively normal. But then yeah. pink nail polish, and I've been seeing so much of this shit too. Just dudes with nail polish. I'm like, bro, and it's not even like they're goth. Like it's black or they're doing a bit. It's just like they're just wearing it. Yeah. It's like gaudy ass colors and shit. I'm like, yo, nigger. Like, why did you do that? Like, what made you think that that was something that you should do? I don't
because
get it.
Because the
man.
White race has fallen, now, essentially.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, my thing is, like, I have never been one where I felt like gaudily accessorizing myself was something that should be done for any reason.
McNabb
comment.
In fact,
I'm always like, I want to be, like, aggressively, like, normal in how I present to people. But, well, here we are. Yeah, I guess so, yeah, that we have McNabb with the gauges. But that's not, like, gay, is it? Maybe? I don't know. I'll just step back on this one, I guess. Yeah.
It's only gay. It's only gay if your pecker fits through that hole, I guess. Sorry.
Not even that big. Scooping out with huge holes in your ears.
I know it's true. I've
seen traditionalist. Makes me feel like I'm out of step.
See their teeth, and I'm like, bro, like.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to today's daily show. The first half, anyway, with annoying ads interrupting it throughout. You can get away from this by going to therightstuff.biz/paywall and signing up for a subscription. You will be treated to the full show on a convenient RSS feed in one giant file. You'll never have to hear these sales pitches again. And you'll get to comment and use the Bang Forum. What fun! Join us. therightstuff.biz/paywall.
You're going to get tooth decay.
Yeah. I mean, go with
because you
soul.
Need to have, like, you need your teeth to be, like, coated in, like, saliva. And if they're always dried out. Like, anyway.
Compared to these people.
It's true. You don't have, like,
well, that's actually that, like, true. The ear gauge is kind of just, like, trad now because it's just, like, whatever.
Yeah.
I always thought that was a strange thing to make fun of me about. You get stretched nubes.
Well, people just want to make fun of people about stuff.
Like, if I didn't, would I magically transform into not being a fucking American? I'd still be an American.
Maybe you would.
You might like pickup trucks if you didn't have stretched
nubes. Maybe you would.
That's the most embarrassing thing, is to be an American.
Well,
man, I don't want to be down
on
myself today.
I'm not embarrassed by something I can't actually help.
Yeah, I'm having a good
but
morning.
Like, but I'm also like, no, like there's no, now what would be embarrassing would be going out and being aggressively proud of being an American. That's like, okay, now you've really played yourself.
I don't think you could be a respectable person if you're an American. I think it's impossible. Well, I think you'd always have to kind of mumble that under your breath. Like, you know, I'm wearing a suit. I have correct opinions and interpretations of the world. I got a good worldview. I'm a reliable person. I'm also from America.
Well, from America. Can't help where you were born.
From America. Don't tell anybody.
Yeah, but what's better? Like, I'm from Europe? I'm from Canada?
Literally any other place is marginally better.
Canada? As not Canadians,
I think you could say, yeah, you could be more proud to be a Canadian.
The Gaza Strip. I'm from the Gaza Strip. That was better. Very powerful.
I was driven out of the Gaza Strip by evil kikes.
And I actually fight them when they try.
Yeah, now that is something respectable. That's a very respectable thing.
Yeah.
Imagine, like, Gaza populated by Americans. Listen, you're going to make the Jews mad if you try. We gotta not get in trouble. Everybody just, look, they just want us to evacuate a few miles down south. Just go. God.
Just move.
It's a reasonable thing to do. You can, like,
if you don't
can
like
still,
it, here, move.
You can live in southern Gaza and still watch Netflix and eat McDonald's. There's no reason to stick your neck out and get your hospital blown up. They're not even really that bad. They don't really rule Gaza. Listen, Gaza's ruled by Hamas, okay? They're totally in control. The Jews are just kind of, like, also there, too. And it's just the right-wing ones that want to genocide. It's the left-wing... Jewish authoritarian, the left-wing Jewish occupiers, they actually like brown people like us. Right, guys? So we got to keep our optics together, not piss them off.
Well, how did they conquer the world, these Palestinians? I literally have an article here. I don't know if we're ready to segue or if we want to.
No, that's a good segue.
Like,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, let's do it. This is your, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I don't want to make Americans mad. They might sit around and do nothing.
Yeah,
dude.
I was just going to say, if there's one class of people you can make mad and not worry about it,
it's
Americans.
Don't piss off those Americans, because you never know. They might actually just do absolutely nothing at all.
They might stamp their feet and cry about it a little louder and make an ass of themselves. Well, that's what they might do.
What's amazing, here's the thing. Let me stop you.
They'll stamp their feet and cry about it if they perceive that they won't get in any like personal or financial trouble for doing so. if they feel like, you know, if I stamp my feet and cry about this issue, I might like not get a good deal at your favorite retailer. Like, maybe I won't do that because I don't want to lose my access to coupons.
Yeah, I might lose my points at like the local retail shop.
Yes.
I'll lose my points.
I might lose my like rewards account at Lowe's if I cry too loudly about this issue. So I'm just gonna keep my mouth shut so I don't get in trouble at the Lowe's home improvement box store.
Well, one of the things that's sort of interesting, I guess we'll seg you later. One of the things that's sort of interesting about the American mentality is that like very much of not wanting to step out of the box, if you will, or out of the normal, out of the, not wanting to step outside the Overton window frame, if you will. Well, I think people should actually just jump right through the Overton window, just throw themselves out of it, preferably from several stories up. Like how many stories up is the Overton window? Like what floor is it on? Is it on like the 10th floor?
Knowing Americans, you know, it's not high enough to actually kill you. You just like break your hip and be stuck.
You just like kind of hurt yourself when like inconvenient. You just break your hip.
It'd just be like,
like boomers do. But, yeah. but shit, what was I even saying?
Shit about Americans.
I think it was sort of saying it's like the Americans that are sort of cowed by the idea of like social embarrassment or like backlash from other people, because nobody in America knows what other people think, right? So right. Because they don't talk to anybody, so they think that
social backlash. You're wearing sweatpants.
This is kind of exactly that you're jumping once again. You're jumping ahead. I'm trying to build. To it. You're going right to the end. We have 3 hours to fill. I'm trying to build to it. Right? No, but it's like, yeah, it's like, it's sort of like, okay, so you're worried that in America, you're going to be embarrassed. Like, think about it. Or you're going to, like, social ostracism or something like that is going to come. It's like, have you looked around? So that's kind of my thing to maybe tell people, hey, look, you know, honestly, at what point is that bargain that you're making about like, I'm going to stay inside a comfort zone. Like at what point is like, hey, this comfort zone itself actually just sucks. So what does it matter? Maybe go outside of that comfort zone, because like, yeah. I'm more comfortable outside of a comfort zone, if you will. But yeah. Also like the other thing I would say to people is, you know, it's actually so atomized that other people probably just won't say anything to you anyway.
The American comfort zone is like you wore your pajamas out of doors, but it also just happens to be pajama day. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's happened with my kids.
I think you said something about wearing pajamas.
Oh, God damn it. Are you back? Oh, God, he's
maybe
all
fuzzy. Maybe it's on my end, unfortunately.
Yeah, it looks like it's on your end.
Hopefully it's on.
Oh, fuck.
There's a clog in the tubes.
Here we are. Right. Looks like it's cleaned itself up a little bit.
A little bit. We're rolling out of there. No, I was saying
you're talking shit about America and the bandwidth crap.
I should like actually like do the thing where I like stretch my voice out. You know what I mean? But no, I'm now here in slow motion. I don't know what happened.
Oh no!
Maybe Jamie started downloading Jurassic Park again. Always happens.
Oh, there you go. Now you appear to be back. Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
No,
she's streaming.
I was making fun
of. She's like streaming the.
This is great.
The timing is fucked up. So yeah, here we go.
I was making fun of Americans on pajama day. It's like you were wearing your pajamas anyway, but it just happens to be pajama day. So today you're normal. Like that's the American.
Well, every day is pajama day.
Yeah. Well, some places actually declare like this happened with my kids at school. It was pajama day. I was like, I mean, judging by what I see at the bus stop, like. I guess today they just call it pajama day.
Everyone just wears the same stuff. Yeah.
Wearing pajama pants.
Yeah. I mean, what's the difference between like pajamas and sweats?
It's pretty.
Like nothing really.
It's pretty fucking, I don't know. It's pretty discouraging out there sometimes. You look at people. I don't know what to
do about them. Curious. So I did like some very fast, just a little bit of research. 79% of people report the current employer's dress code policy is either business casual, or non-existent. So like pretty much everybody who works a job can dress in pajamas.
All right.
Well, I'm wearing a festive holiday sweater.
That's what it is.
And a branded t-shirt that I'm not being paid to wear. Like, I just, you know.
What's funny is somebody said to me recently, they said, Mike, I've always only known you to just be like a solid business casual dresser like all the time. And I'm like, no, the way I dress used to be considered casual.
Right.
And
right.
Now that's just, I mean, the way I dress on mm-hmm. Saturdays, I dress the same every day with jeans and a shirt like this, generally speaking, or maybe a collared shirt. You know what? It's pretty normal, right? Normcore, whatever you want to call it. But it's not really business casual. It's a little bit more on the casual side than business casual. I've but apparently now it's just business casual.
Many places and been the only person wearing a suit, even though it might be like a funeral or a viewing or something like that, or church, go into church and you realize you're like the only person who's actually wearing a suit. And
this is where I'll go,
like,
man.
Wait a minute. I thought Sunday best was a thing, right? Aren't you supposed to have your Sunday best put on?
Sunday best are my nicest
best
new jeans.
Clean jeans and a fucking shirt?
Yeah, my new jeans from Old Navy that I haven't worn 600 times yet. That's my Sunday best.
Oh, dude, yeah. You're lucky if it's that. I went to a wedding several years ago and people in sweats and Crocs.
If I don't have a t-shirt on that has like the name of a band that I like printed on it, I'm dressed up.
I mean, I don't want to go too far with this as if like, you know, I don't actually prefer wearing jeans and a flannel or jeans and a tablecloth, right? Like I do, but like that's oftentimes like fancy, right? Like when I, in this wedding I went to several years ago, I was wearing a suit because it was a wedding.
Yeah.
Do you remember
your younger days, like, God forbid if you, like, a ticket and your dad, like, told you, like, what you had to do, like, to go in front of the judge?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you better, like, rent a tuxedo, basically.
Yep.
And Every time I've gone to court, I've worn a suit.
Yeah, but have you, like, I don't know how recently.
I've gone to court a lot.
Yeah, right. Like, you show up to court, and it's like, you're, like, the only guy that got that memo. You're, like, surrounded by, like, niggers and tank tops and people just slobs. It's, like, really strange. I was like, wait a minute, where did... Is this actually going to help me, or am I going to be like a smartass now?
Yeah, that's what you wonder.
You're
going to
get confused with one of the lawyers.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
well, you will be actually.
Sir, is your client
attorney,
here?
And then, yeah, well, you might just be able to get away with it on that. You'd be like, oh, like, pretend to be the prosecutor and just dismiss your own case. Like, well, Your Honor, we have before us now a case of one Michael Panovich. We're going to be dropping this. It's just not worth it. Okay.
Thank you.
Next case.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, anyway, we were talking about
but
Palestine.
Yeah, when I went in for, like, stupid traffic shit and, like, other shit, like, 20 years ago in what the hell's the name of that town? Tewaco, New Jersey. Which is with some it was a larger jurisdiction that the court was. I forget, like, Montvale or something like that. Can't remember. Yeah, man, even then... And the thing was, back then, there was, like, some attempt to keep some kind of order because, like, frankly, what I was doing, like, yeah, I should have probably gotten a ticket or something, right? But then this one cop became, like, personally obsessed with me even after I, like, made amends.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, I did what the court needed, and he became personally obsessed with me and kept, like, pulling me over and fucking with me even though I, like, actually cleaned up my act.
Right.
Like, I never did the thing I did again, which is just have weed, right? After that, I legitimately, like, never had weed again after that. I actually just stopped. And he kept thinking I would have it again. And I was like, bro, like, I don't have weed.
Like he wanted
I know
some.
You think I do, but I don't. And that's he was really like more funny. Mad about that. Cause I guess he got used to the idea of like, once we get someone, we can just keep like going to that. Well, but, in the court, dude, they had all kinds of just niggers that were like passing through the town and they would just like pull them over and they had just something on them.
Yeah.
So there was like, but now they would like just not be allowed to do that anymore.
Right.
Be like, why? And it's cause, and it's like, and I was even sitting there like, I only pulled that guy over cause he's black. Oh, they got something, but still like, I'm not dumb. Like that's why they pulled
that
guy
though.
Over.
That's okay. What I don't like is
I'm fine with it. I don't have a problem.
They should be,
but it's just sort of funny.
Police should be doing that. Not actually going around and checking on you, like your driving skills, you know, like what I got a ticket.
Right. They're like, oh, you meandered over the center line there for a second. It's like, oh, I did?
Well, like, I didn't.
Did anything else happen?
I rolled through a stop sign in an empty intersection, and I found myself in court for that.
There's no one around for miles. You came to a rolling stop. Well,
like you're fucked. You're going to have to come in and You're going to have to at least come in and take some kind of, like, non-points on your license conviction. We'll make a deal with you when you get there. But still, it's like, really? I got to take a day off work.
Just paying them.
You just go, you're just revenuing. It's like, can you just... Like, do we really have to do this? Like, that's no. You should be looking for black people and Mexicans to like pull over with weapons and drugs.
You really should just be discouraging them from entering your town. That should be the ultimate goal.
The niggers for something. I want to thank them for the summer of love because it has forced the police to stop pulling people over for dumb bullshit. Nowadays, where I live, you can get away without having a functional headlight. Your inspection, they won't give a shit about that for like months at a time.
They have stopped doing all kinds of stuff. I mean, it might be that actually the price that we would have to pay for an actual like functional society would be cops like bugging people on like minor little shit, which I guess is probably something we'd have to just ultimately live with. But like, yeah, dude, since 2020, cops are just, I barely see them. I get pulled over regularly. I don't, but it's like just I don't have any worry that like
it's not true. If you're like on the interstates, the state troopers are still doing their job, but it's like if like in towns and county
they
stuff
are
is different.
Still prosecuting speeders, it seems like. But if you were just
I remember Thanksgiving Day
tag light out.
Thanksgiving Day, they're out in force. I'm like, you motherfuckers. Out here revenueing on Thanksgiving Day. People are, you know they're driving to a Thanksgiving family.
You know they're
together,
just going to.
And you're ruining their fucking holiday. These motherfuckers, both states, Pennsylvania and New York, I saw them all. I was like, wow, that is some fucked up shit. But that's, there you go.
Did you know that the rightstuff.biz is 100% listener funded? The only reason you're hearing this right now is because you're only getting half the show. There's so much content you're missing, and you'll never hear these ads again if you get behind the paywall at therightstuff.biz/paywall.
Get out there. A lot of travelers on the road. They're going to be in a hurry, driving a long ways.
They also do the bit. They justify it to themselves.
Over the river and through the woods.
Holiday
for like
weekend,
3 points
we're looking
my license,
for drunk drivers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, you're not.
No, not like not at noon. That's when I really saw them, like 12 o'clock at noon. Yeah. Also, like...
Yo, but it still works that whenever driving on the highway and seeing some shit show by the side of the road, I am literally like, all right, this is going to be niggers. Oh, there it is. Yeah, it is. Like, it's like a game I play with whoever I'm in the car with or I'm in the car by myself. Like, I rubberneck just to see if it's actually, like, blacks. It's like
I rubberneck for, like, a
time it is.
I rubberneck to do, like, a demographic study.
yeah. So my rubbernecking is valid. Everyone else is dumb. I need to.
It's a political act.
I rubberneck, but only for bias confirmation. Yeah.
Oh, it's a form of doing like a scientific survey, you know, and just checking the ethnicity of the people being pulled over.
Anyway, so we like zoomed past your Segway. We should go back to it. Segways don't go
about
as fast as cars. About Palestinians or whatever you had a. How these Palestinians took over the world, I believe, is what you were asking, Mike.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to segue to inside story of how Palestinians took over the world here. I can put the link in the chat.
I had a tab open with an interruption where I was going to talk about this guy complaining about how Americans don't have any kind of style.
Well, like, we've already basically acknowledged
that. We have
kind of
beat that
like,
to death.
Yeah, like, there's really no need to do that.
That's
I mean,
evergreen content. Yes. I'm always willing to do that. Maybe we'll save that one.
Well, the thing is, like, none of us really have any room to talk, but we're just like, yeah, we're not pretending that we're exceptions to this rule. We're
no,
just
I don't
telling
think
you
I
it's
look
a
good.
Rule.
I'm also, like, I'm almost 45. I don't have to look good anymore, so suck it.
Well, my thing is, like, look, I just wear jeans and flannel shirts. Like, I've never worn anything different, and I probably will never change, but at least you know what you're going to get. You know, I'm not trying to wow you with anything, but yeah, I still then. But what's interesting is how, as time has progressed, like my just normal style, which has stayed the same for years, just becomes like higher and higher end.
Right.
And I'm like, that really shouldn't be happening. It should just be like normal Saturday afternoon wear. And now it's like, wow, pretty soon it's going to be like, why are you wearing? Wow, you're really dressed up. It's going to be like, you're going to, you know. Anyway. But yeah, somehow we are segueing to this. The inside story of how Palestinians took over the world. This article is a little old. It's a few weeks old. By this guy, Gary Wexler, says the brilliant Palestinian plan to capture the pliable minds. Well, if they're so pliable, why can't you ply them? The pliable minds of American college students was laid out in front of me 25 years ago during a very sinister business meeting in Israel. Now, I'll say this. I don't think there's any business meetings in Israel that can't be described as sinister.
Right.
I think that's an appropriate, but I don't think he thinks, he's like, we weren't being sinister. We were talking about other people being sinister.
Oh, so this is from a Jewish journal.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I love websites like Jewish Journal. Connect, inform, inspire. That's their tagline. Okay. I mean, that's what we do here at the Daily Show. although I don't think there's anybody that does any kind of public address or public outreach thing that they do that doesn't consider themselves doing that. Anyway, the brilliant Palestinian plan to capture the pliable minds of American college students was laid out in front of me 25 years ago during a very sinister business meeting in Israel. It was around the time of the Oslo Accords. I had been hired by the Ford Foundation. Now, that's a whole other can of worms. The Ford Foundation is an absolute is an evil organization, and I think Jews legitimately, out of their abiding hatred of Henry Ford, took his foundation and turned it into just like the anti-white, disgusting anti-white garbage pile to create a marketing institute for their grantees in the country. Ford was funding the operation. This is hilarious. Ford was funding the operations of both Jewish and Arab organizations within the Israeli Green Line in an effort to help build a vibrant civil society. The Green Line here would refer to the, I guess, the 1967 borders of Israel.
Right.
Ford put me in partnership with a young Israeli woman, Deborah.
Deborah.
Deborah. Deborah. Deborah London. Deborah. Now one of my closest friends has just been selected to head up fundraising.
Deborah, why is your name London when you're clearly from Tel Aviv? Deborah.
She's funding for the rebuilding of Kibbutz Berry. I'm rebuilding my berry.
I like kibbutz and I cannot lie. Makes no sense, but it's fine.
Whatever. She and I drew up a plan to interview each of the grantees, as well as Israeli ad agencies and media firms. While we wanted to learn about the grantees, we also planned to secure free marketing work and media to be an essential part of the institute.
Hmm.
When we interviewed the Jewish organizations, the atmosphere was almost giddy with hope, possibility, and belief in Shimon Peres's new Middle East. Shimon Peres is I think he's dead now. He was another big player. You've probably seen him. He kind of looked like the vampire from the one that Gary Oldman played. He kind of looked like that.
Mm.
Look him up. If you look up Shimon Peres, you'll see what I'm talking about.
I mean, he looked like
Shimon.
Yeah, he looked like Gary Oldman's Dracula. He was another one of these like nominally liberal, labor, left-wing Zionist Jews who was actually just a genocidal maniac and who was actually just playing a fucking bullshit game the whole time. Each organization, see what I'm saying? Each organization we interviewed talked excitedly about peace and coexistence, a flourishing economy among both the Jews and the Palestinians, collaborative projects and interchanges. When we interviewed the Arab organizations, the word peace never passed their lips. That's because, see, again, this is very self-serving because it's like, right, because peace for you means they just accept being defeated.
Right. That's always how they do.
Right. So the side that is just like not accepting, side that's like, no, see, the status first. And also, not only that, when in any part of this peace plan that you had where Arabs just become economic units that you can exploit for their labor, when did like you stopping the building of your settlements and the encroaching on their territory, when did that come into play? Because they never stopped. Remember, I don't know many people don't remember, but here's the thing. Part of the Oslo Accords was supposed to be that the Israelis stop building settlements.
Right.
But the settlements have quadrupled from that time.
Sounds like the Israelis'
perspective.
Yeah, it sounds like the Israelis rejected a peace deal there.
Well, that's the thing. It's like they always say we accept it, and they just keep doing what they're doing.
Right.
Where the Arabs are more honest, where they're like, well, we just don't accept it. It's like instead of just saying, yeah, we accept it. And also, Jews just run our media, so they can just say whatever they want. They can just present the issue to the public here any way they want.
It's all about framing.
And only people that are like interested and aware of the situation and know more, who then get cut out of the media, who are then excised from being able to speak, or just never had, or like us, had to build our own megaphone with which to speak, because we had never even had a chance of being in the media before. You know, it's up to us to actually like tell people what's like what's really going on. So they spoke of independence, dignity, self-rule, estate. Okay, that sounds like reasonable. Yes, that's what we talk about too. Interesting how people who are like under this Jewish thumb talk about, hey, these are the things we would like for ourselves. And Jews are like, why don't you talk more about peace? It's like, I don't want to talk about peace until I have independence, dignity, self-rule, and estate. Then we'll talk about peace,
right.
Jews.
Good answer. Good answer! We need the sound effect from Family.
Yes. One person even told me she would never use the word coexistence. There's no such thing as coexistence. We are the tenants living on the property of the Jews now own. That is not a balanced coexistence. Right. No, that's right. That is absolutely correct.
What I like about this is this Jew just steps right over that. Just like,
yeah, he doesn't address it. He's not going to address it because it's true. He doesn't have anything he can say.
He just push past it and keep doing the frame game.
Oh, well, no, but here's how this is how they deal with it, right? I tried to explain to my fellow Jewish liberals that we, the Jews and the Arabs, were having two separate conversations. We were talking peace, they were talking independence. But as the weeks of interviews progressed, I found the Arab organizations were talking about a whole lot more.
Wait, now, in the context of what that person just said, your version of peace is that these Palestinians continue to be tenants living on this property. Like, you're just keeping that status quo going, and they clearly have an issue, a justifiable issue with the status quo that you're not addressing.
And even here, and even in his, if we take his word for it, which I actually do here, his framing to his so-called fellow Jewish liberals isn't the Arabs and us. It's not like, hey, look, the reality is like we're still just ruling over them and they don't like it.
It would be like
the reality is we're having different conversations. We're talking
like
about
standing on your foot, and then you're like, "Hey, could you get off my foot?" And I'm like, "Hey, look, I'm just trying to be peaceful here. I'm trying to have peace, okay? Why do you?"
Well, it's like you standing, or more like you're standing on their head, and you're like, "I'm trying to reach a delicate balance here," and they're like, "Hey, can you stop? You're standing on my head." They're like, "Look, I'm just trying to get balanced." And like, we're having different conversations here. I'm trying to reach a balance, and you're talking about how I'm stepping on your head. Like, you know, it's like stepping on your head. So that's kind of like what's going on. It's like you have to acknowledge reality. But Jews, this is one of their main tricks. They don't really acknowledge it. They just talk about like the conversation different people are having. And it's like, right now it's like Jews, like you and us are having very different conversations.
Yeah.
But sometimes I'm like, actually, I suspect that the conversation we have and the one you have might be strikingly similar, at least behind the scenes, what we say publicly, because there's a very weird thing going on where, like, for us particularly, we're, like, particularly shut down, like, in a very specific and targeted, direct way. So it's like, I suspect that our conversation is actually strikingly similar to something that you might be talking about that you just don't want anyone else talking about it. But I asked hard questions of both the Jews and Arabs. What's the hard question you ask the Arabs? Why don't you just accept being, why don't you just accept that you've lost and you're basically just renting time on this piece of land until you die out? Why can't you just live with that? I mean, that's actually was Moldbug's kind of point. Which is, again, but he was making this point to people who he doesn't really need them to do anything but shut the fuck up. But his thing is, like, basically the Arabs need to acknowledge that they lost and just eat what comes with that. And I'm like, well, they don't lose until they've lost.
Right.
Right? Like, if they can still fight, they haven't lost yet. So, and frankly, this new war, like, who knows what's going to happen here. But, so I asked hard questions both the Jews and Arabs in the interviewing process with the Arab organizations. When I brought up any sensitive and not so sensitive issues like terrorism, cooperation, and even budget, the interviewee would slam on the brakes. No, no, no. See, because what you call terrorism is just them, like, fighting you. Like, why is it what you do terrorism? What happens if they bring up terrorism to you? What happens if they say, hey, well, what about these Jews What about these inbred fucking snaggletooth fucking mutant, spiteful mutant Jews you have sitting on these hillsides shooting at all of us all the time? Look, we're talking about peace here.
Yeah.
We're talking about peace here. Imagine, can you imagine? And then the indignity. Well, it's like,
if you talk about different conversations, like that's not a fact on the ground anywhere in Western media. No one's talking about that. Right? Like,
right.
Hilltop
right.
niggas like licking shots at, like, that's just not, no one is aware of that.
People don't know about that.
That is covered up. That's basically the word for it. It's covered up. The media covers that. It's covered up.
I remember a conversation I had years ago with a guy who I was friends with at the time, mm-hmm. who was a left wing Jew, who was kind of even like on like the anarchist spectrum. Like he would wear like jeans and boots and like an army jackets, you know, and big scruffy beard and long hair and glasses. Like very typical archetype of like a Jewish anarchist.
Gonna go fight with the Kurds.
In fact, he seriously started A-logging me on Twitter when everything came out. He came back out of the woodwork. But I remember he was very leftist and we would talk politics and talk about left-wing shit and stuff like that. You know, I went to high school with him. Sitting at a bar with him one time, and I started bringing up shit that I knew about Israel. And he put down his drink, and he's like, you know, you're a well-informed piece of shit. Not piece of shit, pain in the ass, he said. You're a well-informed pain in the ass. And I was like,
yeah,
really? He's like, yeah, because I was saying, how do you explain the settler-only roads? How do you explain, like, different colored license plates and, like, racial checkpoints, though? How do you explain that shit? And that's in the land for the Palestinians. And he was like, you're a well-informed pain in the ass, is what he said to me. And I'm like, aren't you a fucking anarchist? Like, isn't all that shit supposed to be anathema to you?
What of a Zio-anarchist? Anarcho-Zionism?
And he said to me, this is why I don't trust left-wing Jews, man. And I think, you know, maybe in America, he probably, yeah, I absolutely believe that we should never have anything that's anything discriminatory or anything.
Hey, are you still listening? You should get behind the paywall. Go to therightstuff.biz/paywall and get yourself a subscription.
Anything like that, but I was like, yeah, but here you have this over here. And, yeah. And again, you know, our perspective is not like racial discrimination is bad here. That's not what our perspective is like incompatible peoples should not be living together. And it's not just, and Jews are also a special case. Where like, because they are the thing. They are the engine of, like, you know, intermingling of peoples and immigration and fucked up racial problems around the world. They particularly need to be discriminated against. And the fact that they're the engine of this while they do this shit makes it even more intolerable. It's like, fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wants in America to have to, like, subject, like, blacks or any other population to what Palestinians are subjected to in Israel. No, we just want them to, like, basically go do their shit over there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's all it is. That's literally it. It's like, nah, like, this place is big enough. Like, you can leave us alone. Like, there's plenty of places for you to go do your
cause
shit.
Yeah, because in this country, it's almost like the Jews use blacks as the Israeli settlements. Like, they're sent into our cities to destroy them, and then suburbs and everywhere else, they're just sent further and further out to basically, just like, you have, like, nigger settlements all throughout America, and there's not a metropolitan area you can go into. It's not like
that. Well, it's amazing how Jews do – it's actually – that's a much better way of looking at it. It's like, amazing how they do this, how they're like, oh, here's a place where we want to create a problem for the people that live there. Let's plant right down in the middle of it a big, like, high-density housing unit of a totally incompatible group. Mm. And then just like and when chaos ensues, we'll blame the people that were there first.
You don't even have to do that. They're not welcoming. It's like, we're going to send out more Section 8 and like HUD certificates, and we're just going to be further out from, like, no more of the city. We get this out further into the suburbs and small towns, so that they're just everywhere. You don't even have to build new things. You just spread the Gibbs further.
Right.
Make it
it's
a sweet.
It's the same kind of thing. It's also why you notice, though. When towns do get together and defeat, like, these high density housing or overturning of a code that would allow the building of such a thing, Jews get together and they call you, like, a fascist. And then the people that are there that are like, well, we just didn't want, frankly, high density. I mean, we just didn't want, like, everyone knows, we didn't want black people. We didn't want a bunch of black people coming in here. We didn't want a bunch of black people or Mexicans or welfare cases or just, like, people that don't have their shit together coming into our place.
Mm.
Putting a burden on us, making our public spaces, like, shitty, less nice, making them dangerous.
We don't need any more high-density big shots in this town.
And we just don't need any more big shots, and that's really it. right? And so then it's like the Jew interpretation is like, you're a fascist. And from their perspective, remember, fascist just means someone who's against Jews. Like, they don't actually do this, like, the kind of thing that, like, liberals do. Like, they have some definition of what fascism is. No. For Jews, fascist is just someone against Jews.
Anyway,
which is why when you call them fascists, they get all mad. Because it's just, because that's the Islamic stuff, right? It's not, like, fascist, but they call it fascist.
Islamo-fascism.
It's against Jews. Yeah, that's a dumb idea. That's fucking stupid. It's very stupid. But whatever. Anyway, whatever. But yeah. But this. Let's see where they keep going with this.
Yeah.
From each organization, the same words were spoken. When you are in Haifa, meeting with Itija, I guess that's a person. You can ask that question to Amir and Markul. What the fuck? Oh, to Amir Markul. I guess that's a person. Okay. When you're in Haifa meeting with Itija, you can ask that question to Amir Markul. Itija was an Arab civil rights organization. Amir Markul was its executive director. It became clear to me that Amir Markul had some type of control over all the Arab NGOs I was speaking. Okay, so here's another thing. Okay, so it's just this guy's fault.
Okay.
So it's like, all right, so Amir Markul is now become the villain in this storyline where he's the one that's putting the brakes on peace. But it's like, no, I mean, he's probably just somebody who's like a hardliner, but also additionally, like, it's not. So what? Like, finally, Deborah and I arrived at the offices of Itija. Skinny, bespectacled, young Amir Markul emerged from his office, took a look at me and said, so this is the Gary Wexler who has been asking all the questions. Okay, and so now, like, what? We're supposed to believe that, like, the bespectacled Amir Markul, the guy who suspiciously looked like Heinrich Himmler has emerged and is saying, so this is the Gary Wexler asking all the questions. And that's like the image he's trying to paint.
He's like well informed and like knows what you're about. Ooh.
Yeah, he's a well informed pain in the ass.
Yeah.
And then he ticked off every question I had asked along with the name of each person I had posed the question. Okay, so he's on top of things. So he knows what's going on. Wow, terrible. Maybe does he have a network of spies?
He brought us into his office and began pacing. So, Gary Wexler, let me answer your questions in the following way. One, Gary Wexler, who's sitting in front of me now, went to Los Angeles City College for 2 years, where you were an Israel activist and editor of the school newspaper. You wrote a lot about Israel and continue to do so at California State University, Northridge. You spent 5 summers as a volunteer in Kibbutz Eilat HaShashar. Through your marketing agency, Passion Marketing, you service the following clients of the Jewish world in Israel. And he named every one. I knew this guy was trouble.
Okay, so basically, this is a guy. He did like, I guess, what do they call it in the biz? Oppo research?
Oppo research.
He did his fucking Oppo research on you. He knew who you were. He knew what you were about.
He looked at your LinkedIn.
Interesting here, because I guarantee you the fucking Jews and their intelligence agencies have dossiers like
this. Listen to this
on
shit.
Every fucking right. one of these right. people. Are you trying to tell me that Gary Wexler didn't have a folder on Amir Markul
right,
before
on.
I went to this meeting? Fuck off.
We are reaching things that didn't happen, levels of this did not fucking happen. This next paragraph, this just...
You gotta read this,
this
in
just
like the
didn't
Himmler voice.
This just didn't... And now, Gary Wexler, he sat down, let me give you your direct answers. He looked me straight in the eye. Just like you are a Zionist campus activist, we will create over the next years Palestinian campus activists in America and all over the world. Bigger and better than any Zionist activist. Just like you spent your summers in kibbutz, we will bring college students to spend their summers in refugee camps and work with our people. Just like you have been part of creating global pro-Israel organizations, we will create global pro-Palestinian organizations. I can't do it.
A network of global pro-Palestinian organizations.
We will rule the world!
How are you, Gary Wexler? What do you think of that?
Wait till you see our pro-Palestinian moon base. Wait till you see our scientific installation in Antarctica.
Just like you today help create PR campaigns and events for Israel.
Now you sound like Boris.
That's not German or Arab. I don't know, something in
so
between.
So will we, but we will get more coverage than you ever have.
How do you like that, Gary Wexler? Now you can do like the perverted German one, like, how do you like that, Gary Wexler?
He cuts like, off your Johnson! Like in Big Lebowski or whatever.
Now's the time for Palestinian organizations when we dance on your grave, Gary Wexler.
He stood again, this time right over me. You wonder how we will make this happen?
Wait, I thought he was like a short nerd with glasses.
That's right.
You wonder how...
Yeah, he like looms.
You wonder how we will make this happen? How will we pay for this? Not with the money from your liberal Jewish organizations that are now funding us, but from the European Union, Arab and Muslim governments, wealthy Arab people and their organizations. Eventually, we will not take another dollar from Jews.
Wow, he has like the same financing plan as TRS.
Then he approached real close. What do you think of this? I took a breath.
Yeah, this is definitely...
I remain professional. Nothing. I'm here on behalf of the Ford Foundation, collecting information for a planned marketing institute. He came even closer. I am asking, what does Gary Wexler think of what I just said? You, Gary Wexler. I repeated my answer.
This is definitely bullshit. Like,
these are things that happened.
Yeah.
He came even closer. I ask again. What does Gary Wexler think of what I just said? Deborah and I got up. I took my writing pad. I feel that you are threatening me and we are leaving.
Well, here's the funny thing. Even if this is true, which it's not, he didn't threaten him. He just said, like, yo, that shit you're doing, we're going to actually try and use your strategy against you.
Oh, my God. Listen to this.
And he says, Jew was like, oh, God.
He says, the next morning I received a call from the program officer at the Ford Foundation. Gary, we have a problem. We received a call from Amir Makul, and we understand you spewed all sorts of Zionist propaganda, and he felt very threatened by you. Which is probably what really
true.
That's probably what actually happened. Like, yeah, it's like this is...
Or
this,
just like none of this is true. That's another option.
I believe that part. I believe that...
Well, because remember, we saw that liberal Jew, what was his name? Stuart Smallhats or whatever. Like, what was that guy's name, right? Stuart Metz or what the fuck? That guy threatening the kebab dealer.
Doggone it, people like me.
The fucking Egyptian dude.
I don't remember his name, but I remember the story.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I just don't remember his name.
Look out, Stuart Smallhats.
Yeah.
whatever his name was. We saw him, and he was a Gary Wexler type. He was a libtarded Jew in the Obama administration who was dealing with Israeli-Palestine issues. Actually, he was doing that right at the time when they would have been doing Oslo type shit. Although he was, I think, 99 to 2003. That was actually a pretty pivotal time period. But in any case, that guy was a liberal Jew who looked and presented much like Gary Wexler, and look at the shit that he was saying.
Yeah.
So he was probably saying this shit to this Amir Markul guy. Like, yeah.
So he says, I told him it was a lie. The program officer continued to press me as to what I had said. I related to the conversation word for word, which I guess is the script I just comedically read above. He repeated what Amir Markul had said. I told him to call Deborah London, who was with me the entire interview, and to verify it with her, because, you know, we wouldn't lie together.
We would cover for each other, right? Yeah,
I also told him that they better check their funding to these Arab organizations, because Amir Makul appeared to be controlling all of them with some very hateful behaviors. He backed down.
Really, what you did was you connived a way to cut funding to Arab organizations from the Ford Foundation.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually what happened here.
What do you think? All
the rest
Vexler?
Is just made up.
Deborah and I wrote up our recommendations for how they needed to build the marketing institute, including a recommendation for using the pro bono work worth nearly 1 million shekels that we had secured from the ad agencies. The program officer, a former academic focused on the nonprofit sector, couldn't understand the value of business being involved and rejected it out of hand. A few weeks later, he told Deborah and me that he had hired an NGO consulting team to finish the work. They would be giving several hours of consultation to each organization. Several years later, I learned that Amir Makul had been arrested by the Israelis as a spy for Syria.
Or just as an Arab.
Yeah, basically.
Just as an enemy, because he's just someone they wanted to ethnically cleanse, mm-hmm. and he was kind of a particular pain in the ass, I suppose. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But what I'm actually reading here is that what the Ford Foundation was doing was setting up the terms of Palestinian surrender.
Yeah.
And Amir Markul and others like him just didn't want to be a part of that. And the Palestinians actually were like, all right, well, maybe we'll figure out a way. If they're going to give us money, we'll take that money and we'll use it for what we want.
Right.
And then this guy's like, just don't give them any money. Like, all the money go. And this is where, like, this is why you get things like Jewish run organizations out in front of Palestinian issues, so that, and everybody expects, this is one of the things I think it's a level of, it's a level of, like, you know, for an ordinary white person who's actually not duplicitous in their dealings with people generally. White people can be duplicitous, but even thinking on this level, you would think the Zionists would be like super, so one-sided in the way they go about things. And you do see Jews that are like this, like so one-sided in the way they go about things, that they would never have a Jew being like critical of Israel or strategically taking a Israel critical stance that ultimately benefits the Jews. Because having ultimately, if they let any Arab actually be in charge of some of these NGOs or organizations that they were giving grant money to through the Ford Foundation, you would get something like this, right? You get something like what he was talking about. And in the end, they did get it. But that's because there were things separate from Jews that were formed, or things got away from them or whatever. But they get out in front of things, and ultimately they put a Jew out in front of it. That's why the only things in America particularly where they have the most control over anything, possibly even more than in Israel itself, they have more control here. Everything Palestine is run by Jews. Jewish Voices for Peace, Peace Now, these other groups, they're all run by Jews. And even Jonathan mm-hmm. Greenblatt in his bitching, he talked about Jewish Voices for Peace. But in a way, that's who he wants to be arguing with. He wants to be ultimately arguing with them because he knows in the end they're Jews. And they can be, in the end, the argument itself is what favors the Jewish thing. I mean, everybody gets the idea of kosher sandwich, but it does apply to the Palestine issue too.
Oh my God, I'm back again. Please, you've made it this far into the show and you still haven't shut this version of it off, deleted the file in anger, and gone over to therightstuff.biz/paywall. To create a subscription and get rid of this nonsense, please do so. We'll both be happier for it.
And in order for it to apply there, they actually have to have Jews out in front of something that would seem like, wow, they're really kind of being very critical of themselves here. And I'm like, well, because they go further in Israel than they go anywhere else where they're legitimately committing a genocide. So you actually need to have Jews out there saying, oh my God, stop bombing them, just to get out in front of it, right?
Right.
But yeah.
So, let's see. As the years went on, I began to see what Amir Markul had laid out to me taking shape. The PR coverage was first. This is so funny. So, they're going to pretend that this was just like PR, a PR like coup, some kind of subversive act. The PR coverage was first. The Muhammad al-Dura incident in Gaza when a 12-year-old boy was shot to death on the second day of the second Intifada, capturing global headlines. I mean,
that's pretty
like organic outrage against a barbaric act by the.
Notice that he steps over what actually happened.
Right. Well, no, it's just PR.
And it's not just that.
It's not what actually happened. It's just perception.
But if you go back and you look at the Muhammad al-Dura incident, like literally, like there were Arabs like pleading with the Jews, like, stop shooting, that's a kid, and they just kept shooting.
Yeah.
And then his own father like dove over his body.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, like that shit, like, what?
It's just PR.
This is a PR issue, right? This wasn't managed right. Now, he probably would have wanted to just cover it up entirely, but once it wasn't covered up, then now you have to actually deal with it. And yeah, then there were Jews that were coming out and being critical of it, but that's because, like,
so here we go.
If Jews circle the wagons on that.
So here's a pretty good par for the course with these Zionist activists that spin. The Mavi Marmara, the Turkish flotilla to Gaza that the Israelis stormed, killing several Palestinian activists, grabbing global headlines. Listen to this. I knew the Mavi Marmara was manufactured for the exposure it would gain. So yeah, they set that up knowing that you would kill a bunch of people just for the headlines. The entire thing was people getting killed is a PR stunt. That's what the Israelis do. anytime anything happens with Palestine.
Yeah.
It's like this is just it's like, no, they people aren't dead like because you're Hollywood. A brutal bunch of genocidal maniacs.
And it's like, even if it were set up, how come they can count on you to do it? And the other thing is that it's also
that's the implicit admission, well, is like they know we'll like brutally kill them. That's well, not
the,
fair.
The implicit admission here is like they're dastardly enough that they understand that there's at least a segment of Jews that are like extremely bad optics and retarded and are willing to just kill any Arab, and they manufacture situations in which those Jews do it, and then they capitalize on the coverage. And this, they've been doing this for a long time. It's really twisted the way the narrative is in your head. And you see them now even saying like, the deaths, the people dying in Gaza now are the fault of the Palestinians. And in fact, then you'll even see some like more liberal Jews actually saying like, this was very clever of the Palestinians to do this.
Yeah.
To do this raid on Israel, knowing that the response would be like overwhelming and barbaric and unhinged. And that very quickly the Israelis would be doing stuff that was so awful that the world hated them. I'm like, look, if I even believe that the Palestinians are cunning enough to do that, and they might be, like, it's working still, and you can't actually get over. Like, a lot of people were saying, a lot of liberal Jews were complaining that the Palestinians set a trap with their raid, and that they knew that very quickly the Jews themselves would go so overboard that it would be basically indefensible. And so it's like, well, maybe they did, but if so,
I'm not willing to buy that. It's like, no, that's just your cover story for being like brutal.
Yeah,
like you're still you're sending the message like we can brutally just terrorize and slaughter you people, and then we can have our media worldwide cover for us with this like, oh, you just did that on purpose because you knew you'd make us kill you, and that framing just stands like. I mean, back then, was there any like more honest media that would kind of scratch their heads at that, or was it more? I don't remember how gung ho that was. The flotilla there.
That
was a long media, time ago, wasn't it? When was the flotilla?
The Gaza flotilla was like 2008.
That wasn't that long ago. Okay, well, I thought it was earlier.
But I think they've tried this a number of times. I think there've been a number one. They were trying to organize another one this time. So there've been a number when they actually. We're like laying siege to Gaza, and activists tried to do a flotilla to get supplies in there, and they raided it and killed people. I think that was. We could just search this Mavi Marmara incident and see.
Well, we can move on. We don't have to really. I was just ruminating.
Yeah, but it was somewhere like
this article because it just gets more and more strident the further he goes here.
Yeah.
Then the campuses, the creation of Apartheid Week worldwide. The growth of media. I just love that, like how they made up like this. Like, week. I love how they like manufactured.
It's Apartheid Week here on TRS.
I love how they manufactured this complaint about South Africa with apartheid. It's just the blowback on them is hilarious. It's just funny.
Mm-hmm.
The growth of BDS, the student volunteers who began by the thousands to work in the Palestinian territories and its refugee camps. Oh, how terrible! The shocking creation of anti-Zionist Jewish student groups. As an award-winning copywriter and creative director in ad agencies and a professor of communications at USC, I've developed an intuitive antenna to detect similarities between writing styles, idea styles, and conceptual creation. In the early years of this pro-Palestinian campaign, I could see the commonalities of excellence, style, and manipulation across all their platforms. What is it like? Are they speaking truth to power? Is that
watching
what
you
see?
I mean, this is literally, we've learned it from watching you. Like,
teaching on a university campus gave me a front row seat at this theater of darkening skies.
Well, again, what I'm seeing here is Palestinians started organizing effective groups. And he's talking like they're somehow cheating. Like, how are they cheating, my dude?
He's doing the trope about the commonalities, you know, and the manipulation here. Like,
so what?
They did the same thing with Iran. They were like, oh, the people are repeating these Iranian talking points about Israel. Like,
but
no,
the talking points against Israel, like, really aren't. They don't change that much.
Well, what they're doing, they're repeating. They're repeating Jewish talking points.
Why do I need to come up? Why do I need to have novelty ones? Like, the complaints are the same year after year, my friend. Like,
you trained these people to be like this. They're using Jewish talking points against the state of Israel. Talking points about indigenous people and oppression.
Truth.
Yeah, but it's truth. But the confusion they try to muddy the debate is they make it about like these Jewish talking points about oppression and indigenous peoples and this and that. And, you know, apartheid being like a major one. Like, there's just, you're just being hoisted on your own fucking petard and you don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it's the truth, like, that's why they're doing it. It's like, when there's an issue like this, like, you've trained all people, anyone who's listening to Western media and academia has learned what you do with brown people that are sad. You pretend that they have a white oppressor, whether it's true or fake, and you leverage all these grievances against whatever that government is. It's just like, you don't like it when it's turned around on the one nation that actually fucking does that brutally and as unbelievably as they put in, like, your worst, like, Howard Zinn wet dream about America, about the Congress of the New
this
World.
This is about to get...
Okay.
I've been reading...
Do I have to do any more funny voices? Or?
Well, it's... Just listen. Now I know this guy is just lying about everything. Yeah. And he's writing now... He himself is... Again, there's a whole pack of worms to unpack here. Something like that. I don't know. We're going to have to unpack the pack of worms.
Yeah.
Because again, here's just lying. People of color, particularly anti-Semitic black groups like BLM, were organizing to identify with the Palestinians.
Anti-Semitic black groups?
Anti-Semitic black groups. Now, that's not really true.
Wait a minute. Now, if these anti-Semitic black groups are such a problem, where were all those Jews during 2020?
Just call them niggers.
Put up
just call them
fucking
niggers.
Fight against it.
They were organizing BLM.
Oh, wow.
BLM is quite literally organized and funded by Jews. We've proved this time and time again. Even one of the top funders of BLM was a Jewish woman who literally went to jail for a terrorist attack in the 1970s.
So Wexler be like...
I will have to correct myself. For having the things to do a terrorist attack. When I say that, I don't mean
when you put it that way.
I mean like literally like bomb-making shit and all kinds of stuff in a car. Like Susan Rosenberg was her name.
A bunch of sympathy for these poor, naive Jews. You know, they're putting their money and their time and energy into Black Lives Matter, and they got betrayed.
Yeah, Wexler be
shut the fuck up, nigger!
Damn it. Try to fit it in there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was trying to do the like Wexler be like,
shut the fuck up, nigger.
That's what he's saying to BLM.
Yes. Yes. No, he's basically just saying these stupid niggers. What happens is, here's the truth of all this. One of the Jewish strategies is to project their own, what they do on to others. And they do it to both whites and Palestinians. So their descriptions of how white privilege works is actually a description of how Jewish power works. And it absolutely is objectively, observably not applicable to white people. But additionally, right now in this article, he's projecting onto the Palestinian activists the actual way that Jews run PR campaigns and NGOs. He's not telling you that, but he's describing what this Amir Markul guy is doing. And he's acting like it's somehow nefarious. Mm-hmm. What he's actually describing is significantly how Jews use funding NGOs and activist organizations to get to do what they want to do. And so he's talking about it like it's very sinister, just like they talk about white privilege, like it's very sinister. But when it's turned back around and used against them or the finger is pointed at them, now they talk about you like you're the sinister one. You're the one that's doing because again, when you listen to what he's about to say here and the things that he's complaining that people are saying about Jews, it's all accurate. But this is all stuff that white people have been accused of. And it's not true for us. It's actually observably and objectively not true for us, which isn't necessarily like good or even good or bad. It's just objectively that it's not true of us. We could stand to do a little bit more of this in our own interest. We, in fact, should do more of this in our own interest. But again, like what is being described here is how Jews actually behave and not how white people behave at all.
Right.
So
I don't remember where
many
you were.
Organizations representing people seen as oppressed.
Oh.
Seen as oppressed. Remember, it's only seen. There's no such thing as an actually oppressed people. Now, I'll agree. Black people are absolutely not oppressed.
They're seen as
oppressed. They are seen as oppressed. But who painted that scene? Well, it's fucking Jews. were moved to identify with the Palestinians. Well, here's the problem again, because you forever projected what you do onto whites.
Mm-hmm.
You described what Jews do, and you said white people are doing this to you, to like blacks and to others.
Jewish.
But now, when you're actually doing it in your own cause and you're actually committing a genocide, these people are like, hey, wait.
I'd love to have a lampshade made out of this.
Looks
That's
like,
what they're saying.
You know,
hey, wait.
And
I'd
he's
love
also
to have a lampshade
exaggerating.
Made out of
he's. He's also exaggerating the extent to which these kind of groups are saying this. For the most part, Black Lives Matter has just shut the fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, they've just shut the fuck up. They've had a few little incidents, I think,
well,
here and there.
Kind of rolled
but overall,
up,
like, I'm not really seeing a big Black Lives Matter coming out for Palestine thing. I'm really not seeing it.
No, basically, Black Lives Matter is used by like conservatives and rightoids to be like, this is why you shouldn't back Palestine, because they do.
Right, which sort of is just, the kind of the feel trope. I'm getting from this article, that this is sort of targeted in that way. Problem is, it's a little bit too intelligent to appeal to the average American fucking conservative. But, and they're also not going to be reading Jewish Journal, but this is maybe something like Train the Trainer. Like, here's how you're going to talk to your dumb conservative goyim Jews. But students of every variety were swayed. I could see the commonalities of language, creation, and transfer. My field. So in other words, he's admitting that he's basically admitting my box of tricks is being used against me.
Yep.
It's like, so what have you been doing all along? What are you doing? What are you doing right now, Gary Wexler? You're doing right now language creation, concept creation, transfer, whatever the fuck you're, whatever kind of mumbo jumbo you've created for what you're doing. It's just propaganda. Propaganda and fucking manipulation of public opinion. That's what it really is. And you're doing it right now, too. But so, frankly, everybody does that. We're all out here to fucking change public opinion.
There's some amazing blackpilling further down in here.
Yeah, we got
and being applied to the Jews. Many of them were old anti-Semitic tropes into which new life were being breathed. Well, here's a funny admission, because as I said, Jews took what they do and they tell people of color white people are doing it to them.
Yeah.
And that's why everything he's about to say, with a few exceptions, I take exception to this colonialist and apartheid thing, because it's actually way worse. If Israel were a colonialist apartheid state, they would actually be treating the Palestinians like way better than they are. Because, again, he says this, Israel and Jews are colonialists just like other white oppressors around the world. Israel is an apartheid society the same as South Africa.
It's
remember,
worse,
what Jews are actually objecting here is being lumped in with the tropes they created about white people. That's what they're objecting to.
That's what I just said.
And they are tropes.
Sven needs me to sign up for a paywall subscription? At therightstuff.biz/paywall. Okay, Sven, I'm your number one guy. I'll do it.
About us, it's bullshit. Because remember, actually apartheid, in terms of the definition of it, and I'm not trying to do like definitional word mincing or whatever, but seriously, it just means like separate, apart.
Yeah, there's no...
That's actually what everybody wanted.
There's no separation in Israel. There's no apartheid.
Yeah.
There's annihilation. Like, there's gradual destruction.
Jews are not actually doing... This is where I have big criticism of the left-wing Palestine movement, particularly in the West. In Palestine, they're doing the right thing, which is just shooting at Jews. Like, they're just fighting them, right? And just shooting at their enemies and killing them. That's what they need to be doing. But in America, the left-wing Palestine shit is stupid because it's run by Jews, because it says stuff like this. Israel's not a colony. Well, they are. But as I said, and as I've said many times, who is their colony? It's us. We're their colony. We're their colonist population, because a colony wants to administer a territory to exploit the population there for economic benefit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That is the relationship between Israel and the United States.
Yep.
Jews are genociding Palestinians. They are
what
not
the
exploiting
I'm anti-colonialist
them for economic
now.
Benefit. Right.
And
as I've said, I don't want to get baited into a thing where we like reevaluate colonialism here. Like, we could do that some other time. And there's some good points and some bad points. But it all works out. But like, what Jews are doing is not that.
Mm-hmm.
What Jews are doing is not that. They're doing a genocide. And apartheid, that's separation. That's what the initial UN resolution was.
That's
here's
a
Jewish
solution.
State. Here's a Palestinian state.
And that would actually
if
establish
they could have
apartheid
that,
situation.
What's that?
I said that would actually establish an apartheid solution to the problem.
Right.
The two-state solution
right.
and so forth.
Right. Two-state solution is apartheid.
And I agree that that's unacceptable to have apartheid. Apartheid is terrible. We need a one-state solution, Palestine.
Right. You need a clear delineation of territory and territorial control for a particular people and group. And frankly, the way those borders look are retarded. It is actually retarded. If you look at that 1967 border with like this big bubble cut into the middle of it, and then like this little side piece of Gaza and those two pieces on, it's stupid. Nobody wants that, right?
Side piece nationalism.
I didn't even mean it that way, but yes. But as it turns out, like the side piece was like the most militant.
This is like your Zion appointed side piece as it encroaches its way through the West Bank.
But here we go. Here we go. This is rich. Jews have white, and he's doing the bit like what Molebug does, how he puts certain words like in italics.
Yeah, he's italicizing scare words. Well, he's italicizing white privilege here.
Jews have white privilege, even though more than 50% of Jews are dark-skinned people from the Arab world, Iran, and Africa. Yes, okay, I'll agree with that. Yeah, a lot of Jews are brown. And frankly, when you look at these pics of the Israeli army and these soldiers, you're like, yo, who are these like dysgenic weirdos in their fucking army? There's no better-looking army, frankly. I got to be honest. Remember what the fucking U.S. Marines looked like in the 90s? Like, literally, like, the most badass fighting machine you've ever seen. Like, a bunch of, like, burly white dudes with, like, goggles and helmets and body armor. Like, really could kick anybody's ass in the whole fucking world.
Yep.
That's not the Jewish army. The Jewish army is a bunch of skinny weirdos and freaks in, like, chef's hats.
Like, they do those gay dance moves and shit.
Yeah. That's the Jewish army. Like, that's why they only just need to bomb the shit out of everything with our bombs.
Right.
Jews hold Jews hold power in media and banking, making them the enemy. It's like, well, look, again, you could talk about this like it's a meme or some kind of trope, but like the fact is that the people who hold power in media and banking, there's an objective truth to this that can be discerned. Like, this is the thing I hate about this kind of talk. It's like, what's the truth? Well, we can find out. It's actually public knowledge. Who holds power in media and banking? Who are things like CEOs, shareholders, board members? Who are these people? Let's look at the top bank in the world, the Federal Reserve Bank.
Who are these people?
Who's in charge of it? Who are these people? We can find out. So they continue to assume that people like won't do their homework, or that when people who do their homework and make like charts and graphs, where they put stars of David's on people's faces, that people just won't pay attention to that. But the fact is, Jews do hold power in media and banking. However, he adds this little modifier, making them the enemy. So even if you can discern that that is actually true, then he adds like making them the enemy, as if like that shouldn't make them the enemy. It's like, well, the question then would be, what are media and banking doing? Because if they're doing things that suck or that are evil, and you hold power in those institutions, and you're the enemy.
Yeah.
I consider them my enemy.
We got to complete this after the break. We got to take a break here. Okay. And do, the Merchant Minute. We've got all kinds of fun stuff to do today. So this shit is just getting like really juicy as the hour was winding down. I guess we shouldn't have wasted so much time talking about pajamas at the beginning. What are you going to do?
Yeah. We can always do. We there's always more hours.
You want
to
hear the rest of this? You want to hear the rest of this? Get behind the paywall. Join us.
Yeah, and boy, it gets truly thunderstriking in the next hour.
I mean, I can wait because I have to like go to the bathroom and have some lunch. But after that, I can't wait. We'll be right back.
You are listening to The Daily Shower. As racist and sexist as they can be. We're gonna offend you, isn't it funny? Laugh!